Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You asked me a question day after the election. Are you willing to change your style in order to appeal to a broader audience? And I think I said no, because I am who I am, but I am not a bully.
I am not a bully, said Chris Christie in his hour and 48-minute news conference yesterday. Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. And let's look first today at some of the potential criminal charges in Governor Christie's Bridgegate scandal. The U.S. Attorney for the state, Paul Fishman, has opened an official inquiry into the affair. And in the state legislature yesterday, one of the central figures in the scandal, Christie appointee David Wildstein, repeatedly took the Fifth, which, of course, is about the right not to incriminate yourself. So who may have broken what laws? Joining me, we have an all-star cast of New Jersey observers, Mike Kelly from the Bergen Record, and Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, and Matt Katz, who covers the Christie administration for New Jersey Public Radio, all with us this morning. Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Nancy. Good morning, Mike Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
And Mike, let me start with you. I know you've been looking at this question of potential criminality. Who may have broken what laws? Where would you start?
Oh, God. Well, I think you've got to start with David Wildstein. And I'm not quite sure how the federal laws play in here. I'm told that there could be some interstate commerce violations. Wildstein is the guy who is largely viewed as the one who created the traffic jams, which resulted in all kinds of problems at the bridge. Then you go from there down the line. Who approved this? Who signed off on it? That sort of thing. And that's where the real questions emerge, because we don't know who ultimately came up with this idea. We do know that there is a woman named Bridget Kelly, who I described in my column today as probably the most notorious deputy chief of staff in politics now in the United States. I cannot believe, and I think most people do not believe, that a deputy chief of staff dreamed up this crazy plan.
Well, let's take one thing at a time, and we will definitely get to the question of, could Bridget Ann Kelly have been the mastermind of this whole thing? Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Christie. She's the one who wrote that email in August that said, time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee. Right. Wildstein, Christie appointee to the Port Authority, is the one widely believed to have carried them out. But and we should say that Wildstein took the Fifth yesterday.
Right.
He resigned in December for his role in creating the traffic problems, and he went before a state legislature committee yesterday and repeatedly took the Fifth, which is, of course, about the right not to incriminate yourself. But what might the criminal charges be that would have led him to take the Fifth? Is causing a traffic jam some kind of criminal offense?
Well, that was one of the mysteries yesterday. I was in the room when he did this. Brian, he would not even answer a question of they asked him what was his job at the Port Authority, and that's when he started saying, I'm going to, invoke my constitutional rights not to testify.
But isn't that what people do when they take the Fifth in congressional testimony and state legislature testimony? They don't wait until the actual question,
right.
Did you kill your wife?
Right.
They just take the Fifth. I'm not really testifying here.
Right. So we got some indication of what the strategy is here when finally his lawyer spoke up. His lawyer, Alan Zegas, is largely regarded as one of the top criminal attorneys in New Jersey. And Zegas essentially said, we know that there are investigations going on here at the state and at the state level and the federal level. And he said, I do not want my client saying anything that will help investigators to put a case together. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I don't think the investigators really know what charges they want to pursue, because I don't think they really know the full story yet. But I think people such as David Wildstein could probably fill in a lot of gaps. And as of now, his attorney is advising him not to say anything, not even to confirm his job title. And that's a very interesting strategy, because what that indicates to me is that, at least in the case of Wildstein, he's extremely concerned about getting hung out to dry and extremely concerned about perhaps getting charged in a criminal fashion here. There already are civil actions being started by some people. Whether they will go anywhere, I don't know.
A class action suit for, I think, costing businesses financial damages for these hours-long tie-ups at the bridge. Listeners, if you have any questions or thoughts about the potential criminal implications here, you can call us up on that right now. We'll do the other stuff a little later in the hour, like do you accept Christie's apology and where do you think this actually, you know, where does the buck stop? But 212-433-WNYC, if you have any questions or comments on the potential criminality here, since this is something that's, you know, that's coming to the fore, 212-433-9692. There is an inquiry now from the U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, Paul Fishman, et cetera, 212-433-9692 with Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record, Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, and Matt Katz, who covers the Christie administration for New Jersey Public Radio. And, Matt, they mentioned on Morning Edition today possible criminal angles that include cover-ups, lying under oath, or trying to impede an investigation. So let me ask you about the cover-up question, which I think is going to get more attention. Was the whole story about a traffic study a cover-up of a political payback scheme?
I mean, that the idea that there was a traffic study is now totally dismissed. I mean, there is no – 4 months later, we would have seen this traffic study, and we've seen nothing of the sort. So it does seem like something that could have been devised by advisors in a back room to figure out how to cover this up. We don't know that. We also know what came out in the emails was that Christie's chief spokesman, Michael Druniak, had a dinner with David Wildstein while this was all breaking. Mike had thanked Wildstein for a nice meal the night before. Christie yesterday, in one of the moments that really made eyebrows go up in the briefing room, said that it was of a personal nature. I mean, the idea that Christie's chief spokesman and the guy at the center of this scandal would have had dinner in the midst of all of this and not talked about it is a little bit tough to swallow.
And can I add one point there? I mean, this is what Wildstein emailed to Mike Druniak the next morning. Thanks again for all your sound advice last night. I always appreciate your friendship. Spoke with O'Toole, who's the Republican close ally of Christie, right? I'm not coming up with his first name, Kevin O'Toole, this morning, and he will talk with you later today. This is the day before his resignation is tendered. So he meets with Druniak and then resigns and says, thanks for your advice. So the idea that all of this wasn't being managed and talked about really is laying there on the table unaddressed at this point.
So this is really a political question of whether all the people who would need to resign because they were directly involved in this scheme have resigned or been identified. Druniak, most of all.
Well, and you're talking about a level of Christie's inner circle that is so tight around him that it continues to strain credibility, is the word that Assemblyman John Wisniewski said, that Christie was not part of the damage control. I think the idea that he actually ordered this thing, Christie ordered the lane closures, that I don't know that anyone will ever know, but that to me, that's believable. But this idea of how involved was he when the story blew up, that's the big question.
And there are larger questions of the tone and the pattern of other people who suffered retribution that we'll get into a little bit later. But I don't want to jump the gun on that, which is going to be our big topic number two here. But topic number one is the potential legal ramifications. And our board is full. Let's take a call from Jay in Manhattan. Jay, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Yes. I not only ride my bike regularly across the bridge, but I also have a child in the New Jersey public school.
Uh-huh. The bike lanes weren't tied up, right?
Yes. Of course, I wasn't there that particular morning, but obviously there will be spillover into traffic on either side of the bridge as well. But much more importantly, right up there with the potential death of somebody because an ambulance or a fire truck can't get through. As a child of a New Jersey public school student, I want to point out that they were quite deliberately, clearly conspiring to endanger the welfare of children by keeping them out of school. They were knowingly keeping children out of school and joking about the fact. And I find on Wikipedia that there's about 3,700 kids in the Fort Lee public schools.
Right. And, Jay, I'm going to leave it there only because your phone has some really annoying speed bump on it that clicks every 4 seconds. But, Mike Kelly, let me go back to you on this. Yeah, you mentioned impeding interstate commerce as one possible criminal charge because, of course, the bridge goes between two states. I don't know if there's any kind of reckless endangerment statute, state or federal, that would apply. Jay is suggesting something like that. Or, you know, I don't know that it's a crime to make kids hours late for school. They probably like being late for school. No, I'm kidding. But, well, maybe they did. Maybe I'm not kidding. But
first week of school, you like to be there on time.
They don't like sitting on the bus.
That's true.
You know, again, is there a criminal statute there?
Well, I think there's a whole realm of statutes that come into play here, from simple traffic laws to anything else. Brian, if you were driving your car across the George Washington Bridge and you decided on your own that you were going to, let's say, stage a protest of sorts, and you stopped your car and caused a massive traffic jam, I can guarantee you, you would get a ticket.
That's a great point.
So here we have a guy who created incredible traffic jams. We know he did it.
Or a collection of people or whatever.
Right. Well, but we know one guy's involved, David Wildstein, and we know that someone else in the governor's office
solicited
it. Put him up to it.
Yeah.
So we have those issues on the table. We have the other issues of, you know, various police and fire and ambulance people trying to get to calls. If you impede cops or firefighters or ambulance drivers from getting to their calls, is that breaking the law? These are all kinds of things that have to be assessed by a variety of law enforcement agencies,
right.
And I think we've only blinked at what is possible here.
Dave in Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing? You know, Rachel Maddow made a good point last night about the timing of this traffic study, and she said it had to do with Loretta Weinberg and the Supreme
right.
Court justices and blah, blah, blah.
We're going to get to that, too. We're going to play that clip because Loretta yeah. Weinberg, who's in the state legislature from Fort Lee, had worked on blocking a Christie appointee to the courts.
Right.
And that was the day before the infamous August
exactly.
13th email from Bridget Ann Kelly that said time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee. Does that really hold up? Is it really aimed at Loretta Weinberg rather than the mayor? You know, we'll get into that in a little while. But it's an interesting theory.
My main point was the redacted names. We have all these names, Bridget Kelly, Derniak, Wildstein, but there were names redacted from these emails. That's the real smoking gun here. When we find out whose names were blacked out when they released these documents, then we're really going to know who knew what and when.
It's a really good question, Dave. And for people who don't know, the documents that contain the explosive emails that surfaced this week were actually released by Wildstein, but with a lot of material redacted, blacked out. So, Matt Katz, why did he release them in the first place, since they're so damaging to him? And by what authority did he redact stuff? I thought you redact material when national security secrets are at stake, not about the causes of a traffic jam.
We don't know. The Democrats complained about the redactions yesterday, but it's possible that some of the redactions were just text messages to his wife, for example. He seemed to have printed out sheets of paper indicating his BlackBerry message list, like maybe all of his messages from August, and then blacked out stuff that wasn't relevant to the Port Authority. So we don't – and there's also messages in there. Not sure where the messages are from and who they were going to. We just know that they indicate some sort of involvement in this traffic jam. And it is interesting that he did this. I talked to some folks in the Christie administration who said he didn't have to release personal text messages and emails. He could have waited for the authorities to come after him, or they might not have come after him because they may have not known they existed. The question is, did David Wildstein see himself falling on the sword here and say to himself, you know, I wasn't the guy who ordered this. Why am I taking all the blame? And then he decided to do this document drop and release all these damning emails.
Before we take a break and broaden this discussion to some of the politics and Christie himself and Rachel Maddow's theory, the New York Times editorial page today, Nancy, called for all the principals in this to be required to testify under oath. If that happens, do you think it could include the governor?
I think it should include the governor. I mean, this is the central question that residents of New Jersey want to know. They want to know whether Governor Christie is telling the truth, whether he, you know, and to what extent he might have headed this off earlier, you know, what kind of direction he gave his staff about these sorts of political relationships. I mean, Bridget Ann Kelly was in charge of the political relationships with the municipalities in New Jersey. So I think these are central questions that need to be answered. And, you know, the best way we're going to get at that is with sworn testimony.
All right. So, listeners, we're going to clear your calls if you're waiting to talk about something legal. I think we've covered the waterfront enough on the criminal and civil legal implications for now, so much to unfold in that arena. But we'll continue in a minute, and now we'll open up the phones on the question, do you accept the governor's apology? And do you believe he didn't know? And as important, do you believe he did not create the environment for this kind of thing to happen? 212-433-WNYC, and for that matter, anything else you want to bring into it. If you voted for Christie or you've been interested in him for president, does this change your opinion of him? 212-433-9692. And screeners, I want to make sure to save some of our lines for past Christie voters, because I can imagine all his eternal critics just rushing to call in and gleefully filling up the lines this morning. But seriously, we would like to hear from Christie supporters, too. Does this change your basic impression of him as a leader, a manager, a straight shooter, blunt but not a bully, as a potential president? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Mike Kelly from The Record and Nancy Solomon and Matt Katz from New Jersey Public Radio will all stay with us, too.
Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, Steve Levitt and I answer your questions, like what would happen if you put cameras in the classroom?
I'll tell you, it's a different idea. I like it because there's so many ideas about what to do about public education, and this is not one that I've heard before.
It's another installment of Frequently Asked Questions. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Hear this and all our Freakonomics Radio podcasts at Freakonomics.com.
WNYC received support from The New School, hosting an information session for its graduate certificate in documentary media studies, Wednesday, January 15th at 6 p.m., on the web at newschool.edu/docstudies. L.V. Wood, manufacturers of bespoke wood flooring. Bespoke wood floors are made to order and are all made in the USA. The New York showroom at 24 West 20th Street is open to the public. More at lvwood.com.
WNYC is giving away 5 pairs of tickets to see the stage play A Man's a Man, January 17th, 8 p.m. at the Classic Stage Company. Enter to win. Click on giveaways at WNYC.org by 11 tonight and follow the instructions.
Guess who's the guest host for Leonard Lopate today? It's Joan Rivers. She will talk about Johnny Carson and her first big break with Henry Bushkin, Carson's lawyer and confidant, plus comedians Dion Cole, Billy Eichner, and Reza Farahan on what it takes to make comedy today. That's Joan Rivers in the host's chair on the Leonard Lopate Show today at noon on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking about Chris Christie and Bridgegate with our three guests and with you at 212-433-WNYC and on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. A lot more room there than on the phones. At Brian Lehrer on Twitter, Brian Lehrer WNYC on Facebook. All our social media open for the Chris Christie topic. Mike Kelly from The Record, Nancy Solomon and Matt Katz from New Jersey Public Radio all with us. Let's talk about this Rachel Maddow alternative theory. from her show last night on MSNBC. She noted that both Governor Christie and Fort Lee Mayor Sokolich refute the theory that this was political retribution against Sokolich for not endorsing the governor. And here's a clip of Christie admitting that he and his campaign were interested in getting as big a margin of victory over Senator Bruno in the governor's race as possible, or as he puts it, running up the score. This is Christie from yesterday.
I'm happy to admit that I was trying to run up the score. Absolutely. That's what you do in a political campaign. Try to get as many supporters, endorsers, that turn into voters. That's part of your job. The other part of this that just shocks me is, as I've said to you all many times before, Mayor Sokolich was never on my radar screen. He was never mentioned to me as somebody whose endorsement we were even pursuing it.
So that was Christie yesterday. But Rachel Maddow rewinded the tape to 2010 when Christie did not reappoint a New Jersey Supreme Court Justice, John Wallace, for another term. And here is a clip of Governor Christie from August 12th. So that's the day before August 13th of last year when the emails were sent, or the Bridget Ann Kelly email was sent saying time for a traffic tie-up in Fort Lee. Here's an edited clip of the governor's press conference from August 12th, which Rachel Maddow played on her show last night, after Loretta Weinberg, state legislator from Fort Lee, had blocked a Christie judicial appointment.
As to her husband, you know, Bob Schwanberg has been a respected member of this administration right from the beginning. I simply could not be party to the destruction of Helen Hones' professional reputation. And the only way for me to guarantee that being avoided was to make sure that I didn't put Justice Hones in that position. I'm taking responsibility for not allowing this group of people to do to her what they did to Phil Kwan and what they did to Bruce Harris. I had no choice but to do that. And what the ramifications will be for that going forward, they should have thought about before they opened their mouths. That's not the way I deal with people that I respect and admire. And I was not going to let her loose to the animals. I wasn't going to let it happen.
All right. And talking about his nominee for state court and the leader of the Senate Democrats blocking this nominee was Loretta Weinberg from Fort Lee. Mike Kelly, what do you think about this theory?
Well, I don't think Rachel Maddow has a lot of credibility in any of this. I think she's a political operative disguised as a journalist. That said, look, anything could have happened here. But what we're imagining, Brian, is that if this is true, if this judge issue is true here, this takes this whole story to a level of pettiness that is almost beyond comprehension. I've heard nothing credible to say that this judge issue is even a factor here. Let me say this about Mayor Sokolich. I was one of the first people to actually get a lengthy interview with him, and I found his wavering on the whole issue of being pressured by the governor, staff, or whoever, if that even took place, to endorse Christie. I found his wavering on that to be very strange, and he really backtracked in my interview with him on the whole question of whether these traffic jams were punitive or not. So Sokolich has been kind of all over the map on this and not very helpful in terms of understanding the truth behind what may or may not have happened here. So we have all these kinds of things in the wind, and I believe it's kind of confused the issue.
Yeah.
I think what we will learn in the end is that these traffic jams came down to something relatively simple, and I think it has everything to do with Governor Christie's reelection campaign. I can't imagine it was for any other reason than
that. And at least one piece of evidence against the idea that it had to do with Loretta Weinberg or anything other than Mayor Sokolich not endorsing is the reference in one of the emails, Matt, to him as a little Serbian, and he's Croatian, not Serbian. But still, that was obviously a reference to him. So that ties it to him, not Loretta Weinberg.
Sure. And Loretta Weinberg wasn't leading the charge against these judicial nominees. That was the Senate president, Sweeney. So that also makes me wonder. But, I mean, she does bring up a good point. As she did this at the end of the segment. She said, you know—
Rachel Maddow.
She said, you know, the endorsement theory doesn't necessarily hold up because it's unclear how a traffic jam, it would have created a headache for the mayor for a couple of days, I guess. But it wasn't going to hurt him politically. So she's saying, you know, we have no idea what caused this. We think there's political retribution here, but we have no way of explaining it. So here's one other possible theory, and it's just a theory.
Yeah, and I would add, I mean, there are two other things you can look at to put this in context. One is that we are talking about the political side of Christie's office. These are the folks who are involved in hand-to-hand combat politically, Bill Steppe and Bridget Ann Kelly and her relationships with the towns. Bill Baroni, Wildstein, these are political folks who are from the political circles that Christie has on his staff. He also has, you know, he has the U.S. prosecutors that followed him from the Newark office that he also on his staff. But this whole controversy has been centered around politics. So that's, I think, what has made one of the connections, even though, yes, you know, we still do not know why Bridget Ann Kelly wanted to cause trouble for – cause traffic in Fort Lee. But on the other hand, you know, when Christie was mad about Richard Cody, former governor and state senator, blocking a judicial nominations, he fired guys – his cousins at the Port Authority and took away his limo or his car or something. So, you know, so this does not – all of these things, none of them to me are impossible. They're all out there mm-hmm. and possible explanations.
Right. And I don't know that the motivation is the biggest issue here as opposed to that something really bad was done and it was for political purposes one way or another. And let's get to the bottom of it. But we have a lot of people calling in, quite a little concentration of people calling in from New Jersey saying they voted for Christie, but now – Mark in Lakewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. No, I'm a Christie voter, but I'm more to the right. So it always bothered me, his hug always bothered me. But I thought I thought his tough guy shtick was getting old already before this, and he could use this as an opportunity to change tone. I also think if there's no more proof connecting him, I think he'll be fine. I think actually the piece of news that probably pertaining to the 2016 race that will have more staying power is Bob Gates saying that Hillary Clinton admitted that it was for politics that she voted against the surge. If there's nothing connecting Christie. If there's nothing connecting Christie, I think he'll be fine in the long term.
Mark, thank you. So Mark, still for Christie. Phyllis in Cranford, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I would put Christie at a 9.9 on the pants on fire scale. And, oh, my God, he almost had me there. I really thought after Sandy that he had learned some compassion. But I think even when he said, you know, my team, that he still is not recognizing that he's governor for the entire state, for all the people, whether they voted for him or not.
And you did vote for him. You told our screener you did vote for him last year.
I did. He almost got me. I would have followed him, but, oh, God, not now. And the other thing is when he was a prosecutor, he prosecuted a lot of government officials for, I think it was fraudulent use of their office. I mean, I think there are criminal charges here. So I think, you know, look back further, press, because how did he get off Alberto Gonzalez's list? He's a manipulator and not a nice guy. At the very least, rude, and whether you want to say he's a bully, he's not just blunt. He's worse than that.
Phyllis, thank you. Raphael in Newark, you're on WNYC. You voted for Governor Christie?
Unfortunately, I was one of those who made that mistake. And trust me, it was nothing ideological on my part. I'm not a Republican by any means or stretch of the imagination.
But that's what makes people like you so interesting. You are not an ideological Republican, you say, but you did decide to vote for Christie. Why in the first place?
The fact of the matter was that I had no knowledge of Senator Buono whatsoever in any respect. As to running the state, the issues that we were dealing with, you know, it's better dealing with the animal you know than another one that you don't know whether it's going to be good, bad, or indifferent. But okay, at least you're dealing with some very specific issues, and he's the one that you have had to deal with for the last 4 years. So you might as well continue dealing with him
and try to
get some progress, particularly as it relates to the city of Newark. But here is the thing that I think is very interesting. Whether the governor was directly, and by that I mean his hands, was in the actual organizing of this action or not, the fact of the matter is that he is responsible, directly responsible for this action, because he has fostered, by his own personality and attitude, this type of cavalierly retributional type of mentality on the people that he has in his cabinet that are working for him. Okay, it's either my way or there will be hell to pay. Case in point, what is going on in the city of Newark right now, and the letter that the city has received from the current director of local government services, threatening to take over the city's finances and rendering the municipal council actionless if they do not put back in job the former director of finance that the current mayor, as soon as he came in, dismissed in order to bring somebody else for whatever decision it was.
So this is another example of something that you find in the pattern. Raphael, thank you very much. Let me go to Elizabeth in Lavalette. Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, all. I've been a voter since 1962. The first time I've ever voted Republican was for Christie's reelection. That was on the basis of his nonpartisan behavior in response to Sandy. Lavalette is a seashore community. However, with all these revelations, I would vote for his recall today. I'm wondering why we're not hearing more about that. Even if it's true, which I don't believe, that he knew nothing about it, this scandal, he certainly fostered the atmosphere that made retribution part of his modus operandi.
Elizabeth, thank you. So, Matt Katz, about a recall, I asked Senator Barbara Bono on the air yesterday whether she was starting to consider any kind of impeachment proceedings over this, and she deflected that question and said it's up to the prosecutors to look into criminal activity and that sort of thing. Are any of the Democrats in Trenton talking about recall?
They have not mentioned that at all yet. I think they're enjoying themselves too much, peeling back the onion here. Fascinating callers talking about they voted for Christie and regret it. I will say, though, that many of them said that, or a few of them who called this morning said that they knew of other issues he's had in the past. They knew that there were accusations that he politicized the U.S. Attorney's Office. They knew that his behavior was often aggressive and could send the signal down the line, and yet they voted for him. So the best thing Christie has going for him right now politically is that it's more than 700 days before the Iowa caucuses. And voters' memories are often somewhat short. And yes, this is a controversy that will dog him perhaps forever. But if it doesn't get any further than this, I think the fact that these callers knew about Christie's issues beforehand and still voted for him is actually maybe a good sign.
Nancy, could Bridget Ann Kelly be the fall woman for this? As deputy chief of staff for Christie, she wrote the email that said time for a traffic jam in Fort Lee, and Christie has now fired her for that. But is there reason to accept that Bridget Ann Kelly was acting alone or on her own authority to write that email to Christie's guy at the Port Authority?
Well, when you look at who she is and her work history, it really raises troubling questions and makes the argument no, that this isn't going to stop with her. Bill Pascrell, and I, you know, you could say, I mean, he's a congressman from Patterson, used to be in the state legislature. He's a Democrat, so let's point that out. He has – all the Democrats love to jump on Christie and be critical, but he came out yesterday and said he worked with Bridget Ann Kelly in the legislature, and she is not the kind of person who would do this on her own, and he finds that unbelievable. I think, you know, Matt has a lot of sources he's been working, you know, covering the governor for 3 years. And I think, you know, I don't think you can quote anybody directly, but I think it's fair to say you've heard similar kinds of things said about A, the way Christie runs his shop, and B, Bridget Ann Kelly specifically.
Sure, sure. We know that he operates in a certain sort of way, and we also know that it's considered inside Christie world as an effective way of governing, that using the hammer when necessary and using a carrot when necessary is just, in their minds, considered part of the political game, and they don't make any apologies about it necessarily. And there's also, I've been told, Bridget Ann Kelly would not have had the authority to authorize something like this. So at least that's what those looking in believe, those familiar with how the administration operates.
By the way, I meant to say, after the caller from Lakewood talking about Robert Gates and Hillary Clinton, Gates is scheduled to come on with us next week. So he will talk himself about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the wars, et cetera. So former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, scheduled for here next Wednesday, I believe it is, just letting everybody know that's coming up and ought to be very interesting on that side of the aisle. But Terry and Wanacue, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and I listen to you constantly. Thank God for your program. I'm extremely disappointed, because at a time when we need leaders to guide us, our society and the world is in disarray. I look towards Governor Christie to provide that leadership, like I did when I voted for Giuliani. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm just a citizen, a senior citizen, in fact. And I feel that I'm just very disappointed. I'd like to be able to get some answers as the investigation continues. And I don't like the idea of people destroying each other in this fashion. And they've destroyed my own ideals. I'm really very disappointed. I'd like to be able to vote for Chris Christie again, and I place my hope in him, because from his what I know about his background, I felt that he was honest and sincere, and just like I did with Giuliani, because of his years as a tough prosecutor, mm-hmm. and to find out that he's a political hack, possibly, and has a tremendous amount of hubris that may be undeserved. As a elder citizen, I'm just very disappointed.
Terry,
and I hope that that his behavior and what transpires after this will make me believe him, so that I can vote for him again.
Terry, thank you so much for your call. You know, some articles in the Times by Kate Zernike and Michael Powell have aggregated a list of other incidents in which people crossed the governor in pretty mild ways on policy, and then got major retribution from the governor's office. From Michael Powell's column, quote, a former governor blocked Mr. Christie on some matter, and the state police superintendent pulled his police escort. A political scientist at Rutgers declined to endorse a Republican gerrymander of state districts, and darned if the governor's office didn't cut $169,000 for an institute directed by this professor. Then there are three respected prosecutors in Hunterdon County who obtained an indictment of a Republican sheriff and asked questions of a favored Christie fundraiser. The attorney general's office, which is controlled by the governor, took over the Hunterdon office, tossed the indictments, and fired or forced into retirement the three lawyers. The South Jersey Gas Company wants to thread a 22-mile-long pipeline through the heart of the Pinelands, the 1.1 million-acre protected expanse. The Pinelands Commission, a state agency, oversees this reserve. Commissioner Edward Lloyd asked tough, penetrating questions. The State Ethics Commission has now ordered him to recuse himself from the fate of this pipeline. And I could go on with examples from the Times reporting. So Mike Kelly from the Bergen Record, is it fair to see Bridgegate then as part of a pattern of vengeance and vindictiveness emanating from the governor's office? Or is the bridge thing just in its own category of sadism and callousness to the public impact of their political payback, while all these other things are just sort of politics as usual and it happens?
Yeah, that's really, Brian, I believe, the ultimate question here. Was there the so-called culture in the governor's office that allowed for this to happen? And I believe that, that the evidence indicates that that so-called Bridgegate was not just an aberration, that in fact it's part of a larger story here. And think of it this way, Brian. You know, we always hear these you know, whether it be at colleges or wherever, we hear these stories about hazing. And think of Bridgegate as hazing in a far larger sense, but a kind of, you know, like we're going to stick it to you and just tease you a little bit and mess you up a little bit because you didn't do what we wanted to do. You know, when hazing occurs, whether it's at a fraternity house or at some of these other organizations at colleges, it's, yes, one or two people are involved, but it's usually the culture that creates that and allows that to happen, and far more people know what's going on. And I think that that's what's going on here, that there, anybody who has spent 20 minutes in the Christie crowd knows that they are a controlling crowd, and they play hard ball with lots of people, whether they be reporters or other political figures or whatever. It's a fact of life down there. I've experienced, and I'm sure the other journalists on the line here have also experienced that firsthand. And I think that that's the kind of culture that Christie created and allowed to develop in his office. And I believe, in my heart of hearts, is that that's where this came from. It was okay to play these kinds of, and they think of this as games. They, oddly enough, these kinds of things go on, you know, traffic jams or whatever, they think of it as a game. It's a sport for these folks, and that's the mentality that they bring to it.
There's also an institutional element here. The governor of New Jersey is the most powerful governor in the country in terms of, I mean, he has enormous power. He has line item veto power. He is the only statewide elected official. So we don't have an independent attorney general who could have said, I want to investigate this. The attorney general needed to be directed by the governor about whether they were going to look into this matter. So this is part of the way of the structural issues that New Jersey faces in terms of governance. You know, we have a powerful governor, and when you give a skilled and gifted political operator that kind of power, I think some of these issues, you know, these sorts of things are going to come up. The fact that he can line item veto the guy at Rutgers budget right out of the, you know, right away. I mean, that's stunning power.
I would agree with that and say that this is, he does what Democrats, partisan Democrats, wish the president does. And that's exercise the levers of power and do what he has to do to maybe pull some money from a congressional district when a congressman goes wayward. And so if he's doing what the Constitution allows, then it's kosher and good governance. If not, as perhaps in this case, then it's a whole other situation.
Craig in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hi, Craig.
How you doing? Okay. My friend ran for public office. My office is in Fort Lee. My office is on George Washington Bridge Plaza North.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been to some of the political dinners in Fort Lee. And I can say that the mayor and Loretta Weinberg and that whole crew are very, very close. It's like a dynamic duo. And I really think that watching Maddow last night, she really nailed it. But, you know, especially when you hear Christie talk about the animals. And I'm not left-wing. I'm more of a Rand Paul
libertarian,
right-wing Tea Party type than I am a Christie. I'm not a fan of Christie. But I just wanted to give some color as to what I saw when I've been to some of these political dinners. And what my friend told me, who ran for public office, when he was running for public office and he met Christie, and Christie told him that, and I can't remember the words, the words escaped me, but it's something to the effect that, yeah, we really like to stick it to them. And he meant Loretta Weinberg. Okay, that's who he meant at that time. So that's just my little take on my experience. Mm-hmm. Having some, you know, been to the political dinners and knowing a friend who was running for public office over there in that area.
Craig, thank you very much.
Well, and let's not forget, I mean, it's only been a few months since Christie made the decision to cost the state an extra $12 million to hold a special election to keep Cory Booker off the ballot for his reelection. So, I mean, you know, this is a very political guy, and the problem he's facing now, and you can really hear it. I mean, I can't remember her name, but the woman who was so upset about this a few moments ago,
Terry Ann Wanacue, who really wants to believe after voting for her, voting for him. Voting previously for Giuliani when I guess she lived in the city.
Right. And this is the key problem for Governor Christie right now. He has a narrative that he is a guy who is above politics, who wants to get things done for the people of New Jersey, that he's a good guy who's out for them. And, you know, the fact is he's a political guy. And I'm not saying it's wrong to be a political guy, but this is the rub. We've been telling a lot of stories for the last couple of years about the way that he's a political guy, and he is so skilled at keeping the attention focused with all those late night appearances and all the long press conferences. He's so skilled at saying, I'm just a good guy. I'm not a political guy.
So let's end on this with a couple of clips of Christie from the news conference yesterday. And how this seems to be coming back around to bite him now, that is specifically his focus on himself and what a good guy and virtuous guy he is. He kept coming back to himself as the victim of his deputy chief of staff's actions rather than the public being the victim, the folks who use the bridge. Listen to this example.
This morning, I've terminated the employment of Bridget Kelly, effective immediately. I terminated her employment because she lied to me.
Because she lied to me. And one other example, when he was asked to be reflective about what he may have done wrong.
What does it make me ask about me? It makes me ask about me, what did I do wrong to have these folks think it was okay to lie to me?
And he kept coming back to that, Matt. And I was noticing this, too, as the news conference went on. He didn't keep coming back to what made them think it was okay to cause such inconvenience and potential danger for the people of Fort Lee. But what did I do wrong to cause them to lie to me?
I was actually surprised how he didn't mention the 91-year-old woman who died in the midst of one of these traffic jams after an ambulance was slightly delayed in getting to her. I was surprised
that... by the way, we should say that her family told the New York Times, it's in today's edition, that they don't think the traffic jam was the difference between life and death for her, for the record.
Sure. But I mean, it has become like sort of the kind of emotional symbol of this whole situation, and he did not... he didn't bring it up until he was prompted, and I was surprised about that. Loyalty to this guy is extremely important. He's met when he has a staff change, and he is either somebody's either moving on or he's promoting somebody. That is one of the two things he mentions that he appreciates about that person is how loyal they've been, and it is the reason why he's part of the reason why he's been effective. It's the reason why there's virtually no leaks out of the office. And it's the reason why he's brought people with him from so many years ago in the U.S. Attorney's Office. He brings them with him as he moves along in his career because they're people he trusts and he needs people he trusts around him. Question is, does he need people he trusts around him is because there's shady stuff going on? That's the question.
Quick take, Mike Kelly, 20 seconds. Where does this story go next?
I think. I'll just throw this out there. I think Chris Christie's road to the White House is definitely blocked and may in fact be permanently blocked.
And we haven't even talked, except for that comment, about the national political context. We've really been talking about what happened in New Jersey. I guess time will tell, Nancy. We can't sit here and be such pundits that we know what's going to happen in Iowa and New Hampshire and places like that, or whether this isn't going to blow over in a year, or whether he isn't going to look to the nation, or at least to the Republican primary voting nation, as somebody who's a straight shooter and was himself a victim of bad staff.
Right. I mean, I think the key yesterday, we interviewed some folks in Iowa and New Hampshire, and the key is the bullying, because, you know, the political scientist at Iowa State said what do we know about traffic? Like, this story doesn't even make sense to us. And so, but then when we asked about bullying, it's like, that's the key. I mean, that is the thing that people around the country are going to react to, is this idea that the sort of petty political retribution bullying aspect of it, we'll see. I think there's a lot more we're going to learn about this, and it's way too early to really tell.
And the state legislature is reportedly releasing more documents on this today. I saw hundreds more documents referred. There's hundreds more documents that exist on 4 days of lane closures?
900 pages. Although the Democrats say that a lot of them are a bit repetitive. A lot of them could be totally irrelevant.
And
but
there's more testimony, so obviously more news to be made, and we'll see if any of it is actually meaningful. Matt Katz, who covers the Christie administration for New Jersey Public Radio, Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. Thank you all so much. And thanks, listeners, to all of you for your calls and your comments. Keep posting to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.